SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Eclipse Award winners. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. And last night, the hardware distributed. 2019 gets the bow put on it. We'll do a little bit fairly quickly here when Jay Pribman joins us. And summarizes last night's activities and the vote totals, and there wasn't really any shockers per se. In fact, everything I think by most people's estimation went as expected. There were a couple of votes that I thought would be closer in some cases than they were, and then there were some that were, I mean, there were some overwhelming winners that were a little bit more of a landslide than they probably should have been. We'll get Jay's the best at this. He's got the long history of tracking the event, and obviously the night belonged to Team Bricks and Mortar and Seth Klarman and Chad, obviously, terrific night with Uni as well as Bricks and Mortar. But Seth Klarman, this was a long time coming. One of the most respected voices when you hear him in his industry on Wall Street and in finance and in investing, and his annual season ending letter to investors, one of the most coveted and anticipated communications in that field or any other. And it was nice to see Seth out front getting a wide acknowledgement from the industry for his long service to the game. And as he called Bricks and Mortar, a once-in-a-lifetime type of horse and experience that, carried him to this, to this particular fetting last night. And he won't expand, I imagine, much on what he said last night when he took the owner title, and he had pretty much saved. I think he knew, obviously, that he was going to, or expected that he would be up on the stage a few times with Bricks and Mortar, the Horse of the Year and the Turf, but it was the owner opportunity where he spoke candidly and basically exhorting the industry to come together and find common ground toward a future that we can all be proud of and embrace. And I sense, with just really hours for people to absorb this and, see and read what Seth Klarman had to say, I kind of get the feeling it could be a rallying cry. I don't know if Seth is going to lead us over the hill personally, certainly his comments were well received, and I was very pleased. You've heard me talk for several years about Seth Klarman being deserving of this distinction, and it was the perfect storm with horse, trainer, rider, Rad Ortiz, and the horse also carrying George Strawbridge to an honor. I didn't particularly embrace Strawbridge as the breeder this year, But if, for him, it is also a bit of a career acknowledgement, and he certainly has bred countless nice horses over the year, and a lot of them, of course, campaigning under his green and white Augustan colors. So George Strawbridge also. So as Jay Privman hinted, a overwhelming clean sweep for Bricks and Mortar. We'll let Jay do a lot of the other coverage, Covfefe's big night, the Roth family getting the opportunity, the Hollingbrots with Mattoli, Vino Rosso outpolling Mattoli for the dirt mail, you know, kind of a distinction toward the route goer. It's funny, the route goer was crowned when it came to the older dirt mail, but the sprinter was not discounted when it came to three-year-old filly. So it's always interesting, and we'll let Jay do it. In the meantime, we'll also have to fold in the events of yesterday that unfolded after we got off the air. And as we were on the air, the word came that Spun to Run had developed hives and was going to have to be scratched from Pegasus. Well, then later, word came that Richard Mandela and team sensed that there was having an issue, and that came after the routine gallop that came off the track, thought everything was going great, and then they sensed that there was an issue, and sure enough, the starting of there's something that could turn into a fracture or something that could have easily under full stress could have turned into a bigger problem. And so Omaha Peach comes out of Pegasus, leaving a 10-horse field. And, I saw lots of chatter how, well, this makes for a better betting race. I don't know. There were people that were very much going to be against Omaha Beach, which would have, he would have dragged, of course, a lot of, as a heavy favorite, would have taken a lot of money with him. So we'll still have to figure this out, and we'll do it with Mike Welch and with Marty McGee, James Scully. Get Jay's opinion, of course, when he joins us after the first break. And it's an opening day at Oaklawn as well. Going to be talking to Hammer in hour two. We'll talk to, I'm sure Scully's got some thoughts maybe about Smarty Jones. We'll talk to Mary Rampolini in the third hour as well. And so Jay Privman, James Scully, Marty McGee, Hammer. I'm waiting to hear from Nick. I'm going to probably try to slip Nick in at some point. Jeff Siegel with the Santa Anita look, and Mike Welch and Mary. So there you go. There's your lineup on this nice weekend. And I just put together the pick five. The Oaklawn pick five today and pick four, the sequence with the Smarty Jones as the feature. But there's also a couple of very good allowance races on either end of it, and the Maiden Special, which has got really a slowish group, it seems. There's some talent in that sixth race, but it hasn't really manifested itself yet solidly. So a little bit of a murky pace scenario in there. Nice pick five and pick four today at Oaklawn. And I talked to Hammer last night. They're talking 50 degrees and a nice day, a perfect way to start the season. There'll be a capacity throng filling up Oaklawn, and really an exciting, it's always exciting to get things going at Hot Springs, and we'll be checking in on a regular basis. So that's pretty much covers the top line. And you know what? With KC on the board, Case, why don't we get Jay without a break? Because things will stack up today. So get Jay in here now, and we'll just get started rather than eat up, 2.5-3 minutes getting out and then coming back. Sam Houston, can't forget either. When Mary joins us, not only will we talk Oakland, but want to look ahead to Sunday. Haven't done a lot of, you know, serious handicapping, but the Grade 3 Houston Ladies Classic, 300,000, and Serengeti Empress, who was also ran, of course, in the 3-year-old filly category. She gets her season started. Lady Apple, Steve Asmussen, Milady Curlin for Brad Cox, Street Band for Larry Jones, and out for a spin, who Dallas Stewart sends, and Brendan Walsh has got Sarah Cosa. So field is six in the Ladies Classic. The John Connolly got a nice group of 12 for the other graded stake of the season at Sam Houston, and lots of other stakes action. They've got a wonderful card. So we'll talk to Mary at the end of the show. Right now, we'll start out with Jay Pribman, though, and Jay back at it fresh this morning after a very busy day with the Pegasus late-breaking news items, starting with Spun to Run and then parlaying into the huge disappointment involved with Omaha Beach, and then a full evening of activities at the Eclipse Awards. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm good, and they kept you busy for a good 14 hours yesterday.
Yeah, it was a pretty hectic day, and then into the evening last night. Unfortunate that the most of what I was dealing with yesterday was frustrating kinds of developments regarding horses and the Pegasus, but it's sort of comes with the territory. Like you said, it was just, disappointing regarding Spun to Run and Omaha Beach, but, the correct decisions were obviously being made in regards to the welfare of both, and now we're down to 10 in the Pegasus, as of right now. So, that's, like there, needles after yesterday.
The hive condition involving Spun to Run, and you could really sense Guerrero just, heart sick. He adores this horse. And Mandela then, that was the one that, kind of came out of left field, seeing as how everything was, all systems go, and then all of a sudden it wasn't.
No, obviously he's a horse who's had hiccups during his career, large and small. You can go back to when he had the quarter crack coming out of his maiden win, which caused him to not go to the Gotham, which caused him to go to Arkansas and win a division of the Rebel, and then go on from that to the Arkansas Derby. And then, as 3 days before the Kentucky Derby, withdrawn with needing an entrapped epiglottis surgery, and then his comeback planned for Del Mar delayed by another minor hiccup, and gets back to the races and has three races last fall, two victories in a second. And then, as you remember, a couple weeks ago he had a little foot bruise issue down here while training, but it was, the timing of that was fortuitous in terms of being able to correct it and be ready to go on and train. And I watched him train yesterday morning, and I defy anybody to watch the way he galloped and go, like, there's something wrong with that horse. he got back to the barn, and, unfortunately they noticed that there was just a little bit of inflammation in that right hind, and the x-rays were ordered and sent off to Larry Bramlage in Kentucky, and he said, according to Mandela, I spoke to yesterday, and then I went and had a visit with him at the barn this morning. I'll give you a quick update on that. But they said that they can't say for sure that there's a fracture there, but the image shows that there might be the beginning of one. And there's just no other decision to be made once you see something like that. It's in the right hind, and you don't don't train or race when you know that there's the beginning of, or there's the potential of the beginning of a fracture. So there was really no other decision to be made. And Mandela has always exercised, you know, the best horsemanship possible throughout the years. Unfortunately for him, he's had heartbreaks like this in the past, not only the Kentucky Derby earlier with Omaha Beach, but you might remember, you know, the Breeders' Cup that Keeneland with Beholder having to withdraw her from the Classic that year because of a throat issue leading up to that race and, you know, other things. But, you know, that's why you think about a guy like Richard Mandela, you know, name the last time you saw a horse of his taken off the racetrack, you know, in a horse ambulance. That doesn't happen because he's terrific and he's a great horseman and you know, like, once again, did the right thing here.
Well, you know, I was anxious to ask you one question, Jay, and you kind of introduced the foreshadowed a little bit this topic. You know, there was all this teeth gnashing and hand wringing about him leaving the stage after this race and going to stud, and oh my God, and what we're going to have missed. And this conclusion leaves you with kind of a, you know what, this is a horse that had plenty of interruptions. And, I think people are, you know, trying to anoint something that may or may not have been there. I mean, he is what he is, and his career is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you'll just never know what you was, because he just seemed like he was getting better as time went on. His Malibu was obviously a terrific race. We saw that he had great promise back in the spring. He was, you know, last year he was the favorite for the Kentucky Derby, and you see the kind of horse he is in terms of how he trains and, you know, his pedigree, and you could envision him getting potentially better this year, but you don't know. And
yeah,
you don't know what would have transpired. So that's, you just have to deal with the reality of the situation, and unfortunately his career has ended, and it lasted 10 races with 3 grade 1 wins, and now he'll head off to stud. I was mentioning a couple seconds ago that I had gone to the track this morning to visit with Mandela, and Omaha Beach is, you know, still there obviously. He's going to go to Kentucky on Monday, which was the plan all along anyway, and he'll go to Spendthrift Farm, and Ned Toffee of Spendthrift was out there this morning, and I talked to him, and he said the once they get him there, they'll do a further evaluation, take a new set of x-rays, see if what they saw initially, if it's gotten worse, if it's the same, and then they'll make a plan as to how, you know, how they'll go forward towards the breeding season, because they can't really, they hope to be able to start him on time, but obviously his health comes first, and they need to just make sure that everything back there is not getting worse and is not going to compromise his health when he starts breeding.
Well, exactly. An unusual set of circumstances before the ceremonies started last night, and I'm sure that that backdrop, as well as some other news stories, Jay, I'm sure was part of the cocktail hour conversation before the award started.
I couldn't tell you. I was so buried with work yesterday, I didn't have time to get there in time to get good and liquored up before everything started. So I can't tell you what the cocktail hour time was. By the time I was done with everything I needed to get done and get cleaned up and get over there, I just got there in time for dinner and then the dinner and a show.
Dinner and a show. Well, yeah. Let's talk about the show, and then we'll circle back and get if you've got a Pegasus, you know, post-scratch Pegasus thought for a play, we'll get that worked in. But let's talk about what transpired last night, and you really, I thought, foreshadowed, you know, the major storyline when you talked about the, you know, the 4 connection sweep or the 5 connection sweep, and that's actually how it turned out.
Yeah, just looking at how, you know, a lot of people post their votes ahead of time, so you can sort of get a feel for where things might be going. And obviously, Bricks and Mortar was going to be male turf champion. It was obvious he was going to be horse of the year. You know, you go back to, for instance, the NTRA poll that they do. You know, he beat Matoli 40-2 in the last poll that they do right after the Breeders' Cup, for instance. So it was obvious he was going to win. You know, Chad Brown and Errod Ortiz both had terrific years and led their respective brethren in terms of purse earnings. You know, Seth Klarman and his partner in Bricks and Mortar, William Lawrence, had been knocking on the door, I think, for a potential Eclipse Award for owner, and they also led the earnings table. So it seemed like they were going to win. The one person connected to the horse that I wasn't sure if he was going to prevail, owing to the, you know, not knowing if voters were going to go for quality over quantity, was George Strawbridge. But when he won, when he was announced as breeder, I was like, well, the sweep is on here, because it just seemed like everything else was going to fall into place. So when he was announced as the winner earlier in the evening, it looked like it was going to happen. And as I had written in the story previewing the night, that if it did happen, and as I wrote in the story following up, when it did happen, this is only the second time that in the 49 years that there's been Eclipse Awards, that the Horse of the Year and all the human connections swept their categories. The only other previous time was in 1981 for John Henry with trainer Ron McAnally and jockey Bill Shoemaker, et cetera. So that was the results of last night.
Expand a little further on some of the categories, and then we'll talk about maybe some of the vote totals, or you can weave it in because it's always one of the interesting elements. And I mentioned opening the show and just touching on what transpired last night as 2019 gets packed up and put away. It was surprising that some of the categories that I thought would be very competitive turned out to be, if not landslides, exceedingly decisive. And I sensed that you noted that as well as you were going through the tallies.
Yeah, I mean, there were, like you said, for several where you knew it was going to be an overwhelming victory for, you know, Bricks and Mortar for Horse of the Year, and certainly for male turf, and Matoli was going to be the male sprinter, and, you know, Covfefe was going to win female sprinter. I mean, those were pretty obvious. But then there were others where you were like, well, I wonder which way this might go. And I thought the female turf category was really a jump ball between Uni and Got Stormy. And voters are not allowed to split their vote and vote 50-50. But to me, the campaigns and the accomplishments of those two turf fillies were the same. And it was just a coin flip which way you would go. Obviously, the Breeders' Cup carried the most weight, so Uni won. I was surprised. It was a long way back to Sister Charlie in second, and much further back for Stormy to be third. I mean, I don't have a problem with Uni winning. To me, it should have been either her or Got Stormy. I was just shocked that Got Stormy was a distant third in the voting, because that, she, to me, was the next alternative in that division. And the other one that I just didn't really know which way it was going to go, Steve, and it turned out to be among the horse voting, was the closest one, was Older Dirt Male. And Vino Rosso beat Matoli by 21 votes, 129-108 in that category. But that figured to be close. I mean, they both were deserving, and they had completely different kinds of campaigns in terms of the types of distances that they ran. So they never ran against each other. So you were kind of having to compare apples and oranges there. Yeah, and then you go to maybe a two-year-old male, which was not a strong category. And I think the voters actually, in my opinion, they did the right thing. The champion race of that division is the Breeders' Cup. And in the absence of anything else standing out, that's who should win, and it was Storm the Court. But he won pretty decisively, 147 votes to Structor, the runner-up, with 51. So he won by, you know, nearly 100 votes in that category.
The one thing, that, and I want to juxtapose Vino Rosso's polling over Mattioli in Dirt Mail, and that's obviously a nod to the Breeders' Cup Classic and the weight that it carries. And I think, as I voiced when I laid out my ballot, that we knew Mattioli was going to win the sprint championship. And, I mean, if I see that there's an opportunity to honor, you know, a horse that had a worthy campaign in a category, I'm happy to do it. And so I went Vino Rosso over Mattioli for Dirt Mail. And yet when it came to Covfefe, and Johnny DeSantis and I had this discussion, it was interesting how dominant Covfefe ended up being in the three-year-old filly category, despite also knowing that she was going to be the female sprint champion. And, you know, personally, I thought Serengeti Empress, Concrete Rose, and Guarana, you know, were all, you know, they all had very notable campaigns if you wanted to take that tack. But Covfefe just pretty much trounced the young Distaffers.
Yeah, no, she won the three-year-old filly title with, she had 189 votes, and Guarana was a distant second with 19. So, like you said, it was a trouncing, box-sided result there. So, obviously, in the absence of real kind of alternative, supported in the older Dirt Mail category, in this one, it was just, you know, Covfefe's overall record, even though she was not a horse who ran around two turns, was adjudged to be superior to her competition in that category.
Well, to round them out, you mentioned Storm the Court and British Idiom. You know, Brad Cox with two
category horses, but three
right.
categories.
Yes, exactly.
Two with Covfefe and one with British Idiom. So, yeah, big night for him.
And Steve Asmussen, of course, when it comes to both Mattioli and Midnight Bisou, Jeff Bloom accepting. The Roths were up there twice. And who else are we including here?
Chad Brown for Uni and Bricks and Mortar.
Yep.
So he had two divisional winners, and obviously Seth Klarman was up there accepting for not only Bricks and Mortar, but when he won for as the owner partnership.
Winston C. With the chasing title as well. Oh, Kaz Kimura, and that was the one vote I'd like to have had back. I swung and missed. Kaz Kimura, that was a pretty sweet speech too. I think he won a lot of hearts and minds with that acceptance.
No, it was great. You could tell he had written down what he wanted to say, and I was glad they refrained from playing him off the stage while he was trying to say what he wanted to say. That was really nice to see.
Did we miss anything? That's pretty much it. Vinny Viola on hand.
Maximum Security, one for three-year-old male. One that was a pretty lopsided result. I mean, 200 votes more than the runner-up Omaha Beach, with Code of Honor third in that category. I thought maybe Code of Honor might have deserved a slightly better support. You know, it's almost like he got penalized for competing in the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, agreed. Jay, do me a favor. We're having a little phone issue with you in terms of reception, a little bit of electronic interference. I don't know if there's
I haven't done a thing different since we started the call, so I don't know.
It's just the connection. That's just the reception. They've just a little, you know, that sort of tinny, occasional garbling. So just stay
Maybe
where you are.
Maybe the aliens have landed and they're tapping in. I don't know. You never know.
Some thoughts about the one thing I wouldn't mind you riffing on too. Seth Klarman receiving appropriate kudos and acknowledgement for a pointed and very well received exhortation for the industry to come together for the good of its future.
Yeah, I think it means a lot more when you hear it from him than when you hear it from some of the people who have been entrusted with overseeing things and have perhaps contributed to the state that we're in right now. So I think, you know, when you hear it from him as opposed to a couple other people who made attempts at similar types of speeches, it carries a lot more weight. You know, he's an incredibly brilliant person, and he obviously has a great passion for the sport, and I thought everything he said was completely on point.
Well, this is always the moment that we, as I say every year, the scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark where they crate it up. They crate up 2019 and and put it up on the shelf.
Yep. Jay, on to 2020, as Bill Belichick might say.
Exactly. And Jay, how are we going to bet this? I saw where you wrote what the scratches mean. How are we betting tomorrow in the Pegasus?
Well, I'm not now because, you know, what I wanted to do was bet higher power. And, you know, I liked him before the two scratches because I thought he had a very big chance to win and I thought he'd be value. He's of no value now. He'll be no worse than the second choice, and I think he's going to actually end up being the favorite. And I thought he was a win candidate, even with the other two horses in there. I love the way he's trained. I think he's a top-class horse. I thought his Breeders' Cup Classic was not a bad effort at all. Obviously, his Pacific Classic was the best performance he's thrown in so far, but just based on the way he's trained back at Santa Anita and knowing what he's capable of doing, I just thought he was every bit as good as anybody else in the race, if not more. And I thought his price was going to be in the 5-1 range or so before the scratches. So my enthusiasm for wagering on the race has been greatly tempered.
Well, Jay, we appreciate the live early look and the, you know, the ready at the ready performance yesterday when it came to the fast breaking news, and we'll start to transition to Derby Watch in coming weeks.
Yes, that's the hat we'll be putting on after this weekend, that's for sure.
And of course, next week I'm sure you're doing some advanced scouting when it comes to Tis the Law and what we're going to see from the Holy Bull next week. But I will see you I'll see you in person for next Friday, but I'll be at Santa Anita and we're going to get ready for the Lewis next week.
Yes, I will definitely see you at the races next Saturday.
Outstanding. Jay Privman, everybody. DRF Privman and your Eclipse wrap up, as well as the latest news from Pegasus. And hold your breath for another 30 hours.
Exactly.
Let's see if we can. Is it too late for Magic Wand to move back to the potentially for the dirt? I think it is. But
I think she's where she belongs, actually.
No doubt. No doubt. Jay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.
Jay Privman, everybody. Let's take our first break. We'll come back. James Scully will get in, and we'll do some capping, and we're going to swing around to Marty in hour two as well. Marty McGee back at Gulfstream for the first full report on that card tomorrow, as well as Mike Welch in hour three, about 11:20. We'll get to Mike. Nick Tamaro, I got a confirmation from Nick. He'll maybe look at the Jazzle and maybe give you a couple of opinions on the Pegasus slate as well. So we'll start to do some of our series handicapping. Also, I think I mentioned yesterday, David Snyder from Orange County, California, wins the NHC Tour. And we're going to... I asked him about coming on. He said, let's do it at Vegas. So we'll have David from Bally's. But congratulations to him and everybody that competed on the tour and everybody that is getting a seat for NHC through their point totals. And we'll have to get that list as well. Starting to get excited about getting to Vegas a week from Tuesday. California starting next Thursday. Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday broadcast from Santa Anita over the next 10, 12 days. Back after this, though, James Scully start to do some Kentucky Derby reporting. We'll get his LeCompte recap, his Smarty Jones thoughts, and whatever else he is looking at for the weekend. At the Races weekend preview. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the tracker on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Dunner, rapper, done right, an extinguished crutch of a rolling inside. Yellow fingers, nothing lasts, but nearly everything lingers alive. Cell phone service is not that expensive, but that takes commitment and you just don't have it. Feels so effortless to be a stranger, but feeling foreign, such a lonely habit. You can't crop yourself out of the picture, out of focus, but still framed inside. Well, then got blurry and my heart started hurting for you.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to the top of the hour. James Scully swinging in with the Kentucky Derby report. You read it every week. In fact, it occurs to me to ask, James, how many years when did you start the Kentucky Derby report?
Oh, that's a good question. It's about 10 years ago.
I think more. I'll take the over.
I'll take the over, yeah. I think I talked to you. Maybe it was I'll Have Another's year. I remember you calling me and talking about I put up an early piece on estimated odds or odds for the Derby or something. So, yeah, we've been talking for nearly a decade about it, and I probably had it up longer than that, Steve.
Yeah, I told you at the time, and I've repeated it many times, what a great resource. It is. And, you know, your opinion carries plenty of weight. Let's tap into it and start with some recapping from the LeCompte. And interesting. And I think the LeCompte, when you juxtapose it with today's event, with the Smarty Jones, there's some commonality.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing about that race, a perfect example of, you know, these three-year-olds, they run it at two and show some form, but then they get some time off, you know, over the winter, a couple months, and can really take a step forward and continue to grow in their frame and mature and develop. And I think Enforceable did just that. His last start in the Kentucky Jockey Club, he was way far back. He came running late, belatedly, but wasn't a serious factor in fourth. And even before that, when he was third to Maxfield, I thought he put in a nice move on the far turn, but then sort of lost his momentum in the final 16th of a mile without finish by Governor Morris for second. So I thought it was a huge move forward from the sense that just really a visually impressive move he launches. He doesn't really get going until about midway on the far turn of the LeCompte. He raced in 11th during the early stages. And then just rallied past the entire field to strike the front by mid-stretch. Carried his momentum to the wire. Very encouraging effort to just keep building upon. Obviously a colt that has all the pedigree in the world, being by Tappet and out of Just Whistle Dixie, who's already produced Mohaman and New Year's Day. So really bred, and a horse that, you know, you look at him with Tappet. I mentioned this in my Derby report. He's had three winners of the Belmont Stakes, but really never made a big impact with his offspring in the Kentucky Derby so far. I've sort of had the thought that Enforceable could be another late developing type, but he didn't look like that in the comp. He's looks like he's could be a serious three-year-old going forward.
Any performances further back in the chart that are forgivable?
Yeah, well, I thought the Shaw Shake Me Up. I he was a little bit of a buzz horse coming in there. Didn't really fire. I don't think he can be a serious Derby horse, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him run better in his next race. Now, in terms of the Derby, though, I did come away very encouraged by the runner-up Silver State. Unlike Enforceable, he was racing back with him towards the back of the pack, and he didn't have that brilliant turn of foot off of the far turn like Enforceable. Sort of had to negotiate his way out of traffic, but when he got clear late, he really finished full of run. He's a hard-spun colt with all this pedigree on the bottom side, and, you know, Ricardo Santana even said afterwards, you know, we think this horse is really good, and it was a good race to get started with. So I did come away, in terms of the Derby, impressed with the top two. The others in the field still have something to show, to prove that they're going to belong going forward.
What's your take on the non-stakes runners from last week, Nadal on Sunday, and, of course, Blackberry Wine, whose name shows up very prominently on this card today at Oaklawn, and the three-year-old events that are involved here, maiden race and the stakes race? Blackberry Wine kind of jumps off the page, frankly, when looking at the PPs.
Yeah, Blackberry Wine definitely does. He's in, in like race number six today. They got a pair of Mama 16th races at Oaklawn, and Descent is coming out of I may have the wrong race, but I did like his race. It looked like Digital was going to run right by him in the stretch. He was the favorite. Blackberry Wine dug in really determinedly to win going away by a length. Got a solid 95 first speed rating for that effort. He's headed to a qualifier next time for Joe Sharp, really solid performance. Nadal obviously was pretty awesome to watch. There's a colt that has a ton of stamina in his female family, but has obviously been blessed with speed, broke a step slow, spotted a couple lengths out of the gate, and just sped right up the rail to take the lead, and won really strong, I thought, late by a couple lengths. So very encouraging debut for Bob Baffert, and no surprise that he took some money and early, future money for the Kentucky Derby off that effort.
When's the next what do we have next week, right? Do we have Derby futures next week? I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Pool two.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we got a big heat weekend ahead with three preps next Saturday.
Let's turn our attention to the weekend action, and I'm sure you've looked at some stakes at Gulfstream, but let's start at Oaklawn and talk about the Smarty Jones and the Blackberry Wine reference. Assad is the Shadwell runner for Danny Pites, the two in that sixth race, a horse that has kept nice company and has hit some boards and racked up $20,000 in earnings, but is still a maiden and is going to be a horse that is probably the mild horse to beat in a very quirky group, the sixth race. And then when we turn our attention to the Smarty Jones, James, it's Shared Sense, the maiden for Brad Cox, the Godolphin homebred, the street sense out of Collective. All he's been beaten by is Blackberry Wine, Lynn's Map, and Silver Prospector. He is a maiden that's very attractive at 12-1, at least to me.
Oh, absolutely, and it's going to be really interesting to see what odd Shared Sense opens up at, because you referenced those. There's a pair of mile and 16th main races on the undercard today. Brad Cox could have easily run Shared Sense in there, but you know, I'm thinking that they're of the belief that he's the real deal. You know, it's just a horse that needed some experience, perhaps just like more like an adolescent last year at age two. He's gone down there. He shows a 5-furlong bulwark. You know, but training forwardly according to reports, and a real X factor in this race today. Silver Prospector is the horse to beat off that Kentucky Jockey Club. I will say this about him. I wonder if that swap moved him up a little bit from his third place effort in the street sense with Brit speed ratings of 90 and 92 in his last two races. No separation between him and his main rivals. The horse that intrigues me, that's going to be my top pick, though, in the Smarty Jones, Steve, is Silver Prospector stablemate Gold Street. And this colt by Street Boss is out of a Fusi Chief Pegasus mare. His half-sister Overthinking was running a mile-and-a-half graded turf stakes at Keeneland back in the fall. A lot of stamina influences on his female family. And I really like how he has won his last two races. Now, both of them were 6 furlongs in the slop. But he beat a real nice field at Churchill Downs. The runner-up third-place finisher came back to win after he crushed him by 7 lengths. And then last time in the Sugar Bowl, that was just an impressive effort to watch because he really put away the competition on the turn. A lot of his rivals in here want to race up close but not be necessarily committed to the lead. And I think Gold Street's going to send. I think he'll get the mile distance, and he could lead wire to wire.
Gold Street, I really struggled with, and at first pass, I made him an A, and in fact, I was very ready to, you know, use simply all the Aspiesens and not Jungle Runner, but the other three, and the stretch out aspect is really the question here, and a reminder for those that don't play Oaklawn or maybe are getting excited about playing it this year. The mile race is going to end. It's a mile oval, so you're going to have the 16th pole as your finish line. So there's not a lot of stretch for horses to navigate if they're going to try to rally. However, you do have 4 horses stretching out here, James, and that's a formula. I mean, you look at Lycan and Nucky, even to some degree, Jungle Runner feels like, you know, might be, you know, at least kind of a presser. Then you look at Gold Street and 3 Technique outposted, and it just feels like I didn't sense that Gold Street could win this wire to wire, and it just felt like there's too much pace signed on here. I went to Shared Sense because he feels like the horse that's going to set up shop behind that speed and has already kind of proven that that's a trip that is to his liking. So that, and a 12-1 morning line, I mean, you're going to get every bit of 7-8-1 on Shared Sense.
Yeah, and you did mention briefly 3 Technique receiving a tough post on the far outside in there. But I will say that colt does intrigue me for sure. based upon that maiden win at Saratoga. I really liked the way he broke his maiden that day by more than five lengths. Necker Island was in there. Sagamore Stanley Huff Colt that came back and won a broke his maiden and then won a faulty allowance at Churchill Downs. And, you know, basically he got some time off, and I'm just not putting too much stock in that last race, just as it just being a tightener, because, I mean, those rivals were overmatched. He had them put away at the top of the stretch. Now Red Ortiz didn't even ride him hard to the wire. If he could set up position and get a good trip and not get carried too wide on that far turn, he's eligible to run well. Jeremiah Englehart shipped him to Hot Springs early, has worked him several times over the track.
Well, it's a nice way to start the road toward the Southwest and the Risen Star, the Rebel, and the Arkansas Derby. What else you got before we talk about Gulfstream and any other place, James, that you're looking to play this weekend?
Well, I will mention one of those main races on the annual call today at Oakland Park, race number 6, mile 16. Steve Asmussen has number 6 Descent. He's 9-2 on the morning line and Honor Colt. First time out at Keeneland on a sloppy track. He missed a break, you know, walked out at the start. Came back last time at Churchill Downs. And I thought that was a pretty solid middle move. He actually showed signs of life after that debut. That Alex June just ran him off their feet that day. I thought that was a very sharp win. That he's a flatter colt for Steve Asmussen, hasn't worked back, so I'm not sure what his status is. But I thought that was a tough race, and I think Descent's going to move forward out of that. So I'm going to give him the edge in race 6. And in race number 7, I got a little bit of a long shot pick in there. It's at a 3 other than allowance optional claimer. Number 11, Gordy Florida, is coming back in this spot for Kenny Smith. Really, he's run well. He's a lightly raced 7-year-old gelding, but he has run well off freshenings before. Ran a good third in the King Cotton last year off a similar layoff from a tough inside post. He's drawn outside. Well, he's drawn well outside, I think, today with Alex Berzer. Facing some 3-year-olds in here, Gray Attempt and Nero, who are going to take a lot of money. But Nero, I just think, is a little vulnerable at 6 furlongs. His fastest races have come in 2 turns distances. And Gray Attempt, you know, really just didn't show much last time in that Bonaparte. I know it was a sloppy track. But I think Gordy Florida, he's got Brisbane speed ratings of 97 in his last 2 starts. Those are the 2 fastest numbers for any horse in the field in their last 2 sprint starts. And he's 8-1 on the morning line.
I used him as part of the picture. I ended up actually also going toward a price, and that was Diodoro inside with Silver Ride. This is a really fun and representative event, given the presence of Hollendorfer with Awesome Anywhere. You've also got Sadler in here with Horse Greedy. So some of the new, faces that are turning up particularly from the West Coast. Then there's Shug and Maya Englehart and others. There's also the Asmussen player in here, Clark Brewster, bought Nero. And for those that forgot about Nero, he was a $950,000 yearling for Stone Street and Coolmore that Baffert had. He was last seen, of course, in the Triple Bend. And Clark Brewster, poached him for $47,000 at the November sale and seems to be working fine, and nothing wrong with Nero. So I went Silver Ride on the price, the Diodoro on the rail, 10-1, Nero, Awesome Anywhere, and Gordy Florida. And, you know, Gray Attempt comes back here, the Jinx Fires. You've got that Mojo Man from Jimmy DeVito, who's a little scary. Spike Sherrill off of a long layoff. And certainly if Spike Sherrill can run back to one of his good races, he's dangerous. Petrov shows up in here for Moquette. I mean, this thing is...
Yeah.
Deep and tough.
A lot of names from the past in there as well. It's funny you mentioned Diodoro, because on Saturday's card, there's two stakes, but the 5th season split into divisions. And in the latter division, Diodoro has this Pioneer Spirit, who he claimed for $150,000 2 starts back at Churchill Downs off of a win. He came right back and won the Tenacious last time.
he ran big at Oak Lawn last year, Steve. He won a really a good allowance win in March and then ran a half-length third in the Oak Lawn Handicap. He's returning to the track in good form. You have Bravazo and others in there, so his price should be okay. And to me, he's extremely live.
Of course, Pioneer Spirit, the nemesis and frequent headbanger with Silver Dust, and that was the rivalry of 2019. So yeah, I haven't gotten into Saturday's card much just because I'm tied on with Gulfstream, but I'm glad you mentioned the Bravazo's return and D-Wayne. I wonder if D-Wayne. I wonder if he's.
They got a 1 mile filly and a race for fillies and mares, the Pippin. And there's a couple of intriguing horses in there for Brett Cox. He is running Iris Mischief there. Now, she did break her maiden in a 2-turn mile at Oak Lawn, but to me, she's like a Humana Distaff, a Madison type, could be really, really good at middle distances and sprints, but she's going to try to turn mile with Talamo. And then Gold Standard, who he has on the outside, looks like a confirmed two-turn type who could be very good at four, coming off a half-length second to Lady Apple in the Remington Park Oaks, and then a third to Bolera, who's a real promising filly for Todd Pletcher. So I'm a little intrigued by that Pippin, which, sometimes might not get the toughest field.
Bolera last week in New York, the stake win.
The ladies.
The ladies handicap. James, anything from Gulfstream?
Yeah, definitely. I was intrigued by Mucho Gusto with Omaha Beach and Spun to Run in there. So, not going to be like a win play type in there, but I'm definitely going to use him in all multi-race exact wagers. I mean, he could be a single for me. Horse I like at a price in those stakes is in the turf. I thought a competitive field. And I like Sacred Life. I thought he ran he came back in his first two races for Chad Brown at Saratoga, were solid efforts. I loved that allowance win by him at Keeneland in mid-October. And then he had a trouble trip last time in that Seabiscuit, had all kinds of traffic issues. He's this, like, turf horse, five-year-old turf horse with an upward trajectory for Chad Brown. He's going to be, double-digit odds potentially from post 11 with Jose Ortiz, and I'm going to take a swing at him.
Excellent. Anything else?
Yeah, in race number two, they got a couple three-year-old maiden races on Saturday at Gulfstream. Race number two, I'm not the only person out there like probably looking at Candy Tycoon and thinking he's vulnerable off of that, getting beat at odds on 1-5 odds last time. But I look at the horses in here with experience, and they really haven't shown much. There's a couple firsts. There's number one Trove from Bill Motti from the female family of Zenyatta, could easily need a couple races. I like number eight Holy Emperor at 8-1 on the morning on first time out for Jimmy Jerkins. This colt has worked. The Street Sense colt has worked. He's worked six times in like 34 days at Prairie Meadows. He's been working them all these 5-furlong long-distance works. He cut him back for a half-mile breeze from the gate, and he worked a bullet the fastest of 82 workers at the distance that day on January 11th. I think that shows he has some ability. Castellano takes the trip. His dam won the second time out and is a half-sister to Holy Boss, who broke his maiden by 10.25 lengths first time out. So there's some precocity in the female family, and this race is there to be had. So Holy Emperor in race two tomorrow, Steve.
Excellent. Excellent. James, appreciate it, and we'll look toward next week, the Lewis and the Holy Bull and Derby Futures as well. James, good luck.
Thank you, Steve. Good luck to you.
James_Scully111, everybody, the Brisnet personnel package and your Twin Spires blog roll. No Ed today. Ed's got some function that he's tied on to, so we'll catch up with him next week, and he certainly loves the future wager as well. So there's your Twin Spires presentation for weekend preview. Let's take the break. Exactly an hour in, two to come. Marty McGee joins us next. We'll go back down to Florida. We'll get his advance on the races he's covering and see if he's got any thoughts. I don't think he went. Usually he doesn't go to the Eclipse festivities. He is out early, so, you know, covering works and working the barns. So Marty won't have any tales of cocktail party talk either. Back after this, hour two, weekend preview at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.